On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doug Kirby.
Today we have a most remarkable book and a most remarkable guest. We are delighted to welcome to On the Bookshelf, Marco Perko, a graduate of the University of Southern California, author, historian, polymath, member of the Authors Guild, the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers, Broadcast Music Incorporated, the Biographers International Organization, the Organization of American Historians, the British Library, and the Institution of Engineering and Technology. His co-author is Steve Stahl, professor of psychiatry and neuroscience at the Universities of California, Riverside, and San Diego, an honorary fellow at the University of Cambridge, a renowned clinician and researcher in psychiatry and psychopharmacology, the recipient of numerous psychiatric awards and the author of 70 textbooks. Their book is Tesla, His Tremendous and Troubled Life, from Prometheus Books. Marco, thank you for joining us today on the Bookshelf.
He was a man who pushed the envelope his entire life.
Yes.
And he was a man who understood his powers of creation. He was not, when he came to this country a couple years later in 1888, he gave a lecture before the American Institute of Electrical Engineers.
Right.
And at that lecture were arguably most of the great scientists in the world who came to see him. And he gave what has since been reputed to be one of the most comprehensive, original demonstration and talks that science has ever had. And how was he able to do that? Even as a young man, this man rejected what I like to call in the book received wisdom.
Yes.
He did not go along to get along. He did not go along because you gave him a grant, which most of science is powered by grants.
Right.
He was a man who bucked all the odds. It's even hard to describe how so much can be in one person, because not only did he invent the modern world, he discovered things, and as we know, a discovery is different than an invention, because an invention generally is, in its simplest form, a better mousetrap.
Yes.
As an example, Edison championed direct current, Tesla championed his invention of alternating current, which was infinitely superior. That's why the whole world's powered by it today. So he not only that, but he discovered the rotating magnetic field. He discovered magnetic resonance, and I think your listeners will find it interesting. But anyone who's had an MRI,
mm-hmm.
an MRI measures magnetic resistance. It measures it in a scientific unit,
right?
Called a unit of Tesla.
Yes,
he's one of a handful of people in all of recorded history to have a scientific measurement that bears his name. But let me step back for one moment and. And I know you read it in the book, but I think your listeners will find it interesting. What makes this biography of Nikola Tesla different to all the others that came before? And as I look at my library, I got stacks of all the biographies. Well, I'll tell you what makes it different. There's a couple of things. Number one, Nikola Tesla was a Serb. I, too, am a Serb. So what does that mean? That means, in the modern parlance, I have the lived experience.
Right.
I was raised in the same religious, ethnic, cultural milieu as Nikola Tesla. What informed his life informs mine to this very day. So I'd like to think that gave me an edge. And in the book, you will read several times experiences he talked about, particularly in his youth. I shared those same experiences because I lived in the country when it was called Yugoslavia.
Right.
It was the Austro-Hungarian Empire when he was still there.
Yes.
So I'd like to think that has an interesting bent to the biography itself. A couple other things I tried to do in there was I tried to make the biography eminently readable to everyone. You don't have to have a scientific mind to appreciate what he accomplished. The science is there, as you know.
Certainly.
But it was, how did he do that? How does one, what was it like be Nikola Tesla? It's very difficult to imagine. And that's another thing I try to capture in the book. And as my co-author, Steve Stahl, who's one of the preeminent psychiatrists in the world, he comes into play when I would get to an area in the book where I'm thinking to myself, okay, Tessa had his first nervous breakdown in Budapest as a young man. He knew something was wrong, but there was no help for him at the time.
Right.
He had, we concluded, manic depression. Today it's called bipolar disorder. And to be able to carry that weight your whole life and literally be the architect of the modern world, I hope that there'll be people who read the biography who deal with mental health issues, because there are millions, they'll gain some strength from it. Because he battled all the odds. Nobody could help him.
And you know, I kind of wondered, after reading your book, I found the book absolutely fascinating. And in case you're just joining us, the name of the book is Tesla, His Tremendous and Troubled Life. It's by our guest today, Marco Perko. And as he has mentioned, Stephen M. Stahl. It is from Prometheus Books. And one of the things that really stuck out to me was the idea that perhaps his mental state gave him the freedom to think as imaginatively as he did. One of the things that really amazed me is that he, when he came up with the idea of the alternating current polyphase, he visualized all of it. Before he ever wrote anything down, he'd already designed it. He'd already expected to know exactly what it's like. Just like a composer like Beethoven, who toward the end of his career and life was deaf, when he wrote the notes down, he knew how they sounded, because he knew what they sounded like in his head. And he didn't really have to hear them to know how it sounded.
Kudos to you, because what you just said demonstrates you did read the book.
Oh, yeah.
Because you had to have read the book to know that. And that's absolutely true. He said, I conceived of it in my mind, I designed it in my mind, I tested it in my mind, and then when I make it, it works the first time, every time. And to draw a dichotomy between Tesla, let's say Einstein, that everybody lost constantly.
Right.
All right, if Einstein had what he called thought experiments, Tesla too had thought experiments, but then when he turned those thought experiments into practical, real-life invention, Einstein never did such a thing. In fact, experiments that he had to have conducted to hopefully prove his theories, he had other people did them. He didn't do them.
Right.
Where Tesla was autonomous, and he had been asked several times, why is it that you don't seek the counsel of other scientists? And his answer was very straightforward. Why would it? They have no idea where I'm going. And I don't have the time to explain it to them. And he constantly got jabs in the press because he was a loner, he was a renegade. In fact, one of the scenes you'll recall, the cover of the book is probably the most famous photo.
Yes.
Taken of Tesla, and it's explained in the book that Tesla was involved in the photography. It was a double exposure. And that's when he was testing a Tesla coil in Colorado Springs, Colorado, in 1899. And it was then, he was in the press all the time in New York. Every journalist wanted to talk to him. He was brilliant, well-read, highly educated, would always give you some kind of story that sold papers.
Right.
But he didn't get a lot of attention while he was in Colorado, and occasionally he would be interviewed. And one of the interviewers was talking to him, and he says, you know, I believe I've received some radio signals from Mars. People thought he was off his rocker again.
Right.
And as you read in the book, he had the last laugh, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Where's all of our attention focused? Mars.
Yes.
And
that also brings up something, and I will tell you this, that I am a college professor, and one of the classes I teach is the history of broadcast. And I have always, based on research I'd done before, always considered Marconi to be essentially the father of wireless. But when I read your book, I realized, oh my gosh, not only was Marconi, of course, I knew he wasn't the only person working on it, but not only was he not the first person to prove that it was possible, Tesla had showed it was feasible before that, and not only the idea of having, you know, Morse code done over wireless, but also voice and music over wireless. Tesla was ahead of the game on that as well. And actually, the U.S. Supreme Court, it was 1943, right? They ruled that Tesla was the inventor of the radio because he had primacy in wireless communication.
Exactly. Tesla battled that for decades in federal courts. He died January 7th of that year. Sadly, he wasn't alive to see the it be proven he was right. He always knew he was right.
Right.
In fact, he commented when Marconi made his transmission across the Atlantic. He said, by the way, Marconi's using my oscillators. And the Supreme Court, you are right. The key word there is primacy. In other words, all the pretenders of the throne who came before, that's not what happened. So yes, it was a battle. He didn't live to see the victory, but he was victorious again. It was no different than when Edison tried to destroy Tesla over alternating current. As you know,
yes.
He had animals killed with alternating current.
Oh yeah.
PETA today would go crazy with this.
Oh
with someone
yes.
Like Edison. What he did. I think one of the biggest things that made Tesla who he was that he couldn't be bullied. His confidence in himself, and I hope other people, you know, draw some inspiration from Tesla, because he bucked, like I said, received wisdom. In fact, I happened to be watching the other night that movie called Jobs on Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty interesting. And at the end of the movie, Jobs gives what is now this famous little speech where he talks about the misfits and how the misfits end up changing the world.
Right.
Well, I don't know if I'd call Tesla a misfit, but he was out of the loop by his own design.
Yeah.
And he changed the world.
Yeah.
Carrying that weight and that struggle and there's some oddities about the man. First, he was asked, why'd you never marry?
Right.
He's a handsome guy, stood 6'3", dynamic, fluent in the 12 languages. And he said, I'm here for a far higher order. My remuneration
right.
is something different.
Right.
And to even sacrifice the cliches of everyday life, he was willing to do it.
Yeah.
And as you said early on, you know, when you deal with something like bipolar, one of the questions we asked and answered was, do you need to be, I guess in its simplest terms, a little bit off to be that creative and that brave? I'd say the answer is yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's certainly based on the life of Nikola Tesla, you'd say that was a critical component.
Absolutely right.
You know, these manic periods that he had enabled him to get an extraordinary amount of work done. There was a period in his life where he got 30 patents in just a couple of years, and it was not the only time that he racked up a lot of patents either.
Yeah, we have two timelines in the book. One is timeline of significant events,
mm-hmm.
and the other parallels it timeline of mental events. And you can see from about 1888 on to 1900, you can see that there were flurries of patents being issued by the United States Patent and Trademark Office to Tesla. And when he was in his down phases in his depression, you could see it was just kind of trickling out. But he was always, always, always thinking. And when he get into a depressed state, he would go into his lab, turn all the lights out, lie in a chaise lounge and have one of his secretaries, he would dictate to them. And he would come up with ideas, and they would write it all down. The sad thing is, when he passed away, we really have no idea what else he was doing.
Right.
Because he was very, very, very secretive.
Yeah.
In fact, he lived essentially 60 years in New York City. There were times when he was the Bill Gates of his time in terms of wealth.
Mm-hmm.
He became exceedingly wealthy and died essentially flat broke.
Yeah.
He could have purchased any house he wanted. He traveled rarely out of New York City. He liked his solitude. When he would eat at Delmonico's, which was a fancy restaurant then as it is now, his table he wouldn't allow anybody else to eat at his table. and famous glitterati would come to see him.
Sure.
And he would watch, and you know why? To watch him eat. I know that sounds odd, but he demand a stack of freshly laundered linen napkins, and he'd take a linen napkin, wipe a fork clean. Mind you, the table setting was already done.
Right.
Or take an apple and wipe it clean. And then he would eat. He would put, let's say, for instance, a fork of food in his mouth. He'd chew it a bit, stop, pause for a long enough time that people would notice. And he was asked, what's that all about? He says, well, I'm calculating its cubic volume and specific gravity at the bite of meat I just took. And what also sets him apart from people like Einstein, was Hesse was also a brilliant mathematician. Einstein wasn't. In fact, Einstein's first wife worked on all of the mathematics of his theories. And just as an aside, Einstein's first wife, Mileva Modic, she too was Serbian. She was a Serb. So there's a connection there as well.
Yes.
And Edison, I'm sure you've seen it in movies, because I have. You see this famous quote, Edison tried 1,000 times before he got the electric light bulb, yada, right?
Yeah, yeah.
First of all, he didn't invent the light bulb. He invented a better incandescent.
Yeah.
Godfrey Davy, in 1803, lit the plastic on corn in Paris with a light bulb. What's significant about that date? That's years before either of Edison's parents were born. And Edison and Tesla was asked about that. And Tesla said, well, the reason is he never understood Ohm's law. So, of course, he's going to have to conduct on these experiments. And the bizarre thing is, Edison didn't care that you knew he didn't know.
Yeah.
And after Edison's death, because Tesla outlived all of his detractors, he was asked, what was the difference between you and Thomas Edison? And Tesla normally would be very reserved. He was taught to be that way. Well, Edison spent his entire life devoted to attacking Tesla and destroying Tesla, because it's pretty laid out in the book, and called him terrible things. Tesla finally had enough. And he said to the reporter, well, here's the difference. If you have a stack of hay, and you are asked to find a needle in that haystack, Mr. Edison would start with the first piece of hay, kick each one out until he found the needle. Who knows how long that would take? It'd take me 15 minutes because I'd use calculus.
Right.
That was his answer.
Let's talk a little bit about, because people may not realize that what Tesla did that was so different from Edison. There was a quote that Edison often said that invention was 90% perspiration and 10% inspiration. Like you said, with Edison, that's what it took, because he didn't really understand how things work. But with Tesla, when he worked it out in his head, it was done. He realized the problem with direct current was that it didn't have the ability to go a very long distance from the generating
correct.
Point, right?
And, absolutely.
And that's why Tesla came up with the concept of alternating current. That allowed electricity to be sent a long way over wires without having to have stations along the way that kept bumping
correct.
It up.
Right. He said, in essence, I could flip a light switch and turn a light bulb on the other side of the world. You know, that's what he was going after.
Right.
He also understood. For instance, there's a very, very famous demonstration Tesla gave almost close to the height of his powers, because Edison, like I said earlier, was killing all these animals with alternating current, and people that panicked people at first. So Tesla said, you don't understand. It's not the volts that kill you. It's the resistance that kills you.
Right.
Amperage. In fact, one of the descriptions in the book, I'm sure you recall, was the first person that was executed, a criminal, William Kemmler, by alternating current, it failed the first time.
Right. Horrifically.
You just don't flip a switch and kill somebody. There's more to it. So Tesla gave, in fact, there was a book written inspired by the incident called Lightning in His Hands. And what he did was he grabbed one hand onto a Tesla coil, and 100 million volts coursed through his body, and then shooting out of his other hand's fingertips were what looked like lightning, electricity, correct?
Yes.
And he said to all the journalists that were there, Edison never showed, "Well, Mr. Edison, I'm still alive." You know, Tesla was such a secretive man, yet when he got in front of the crowd, he became a different person.
Yeah.
He was so magnetic. And a lot of these talks he gave, especially before the American Institute of Electrical Engineers or in Paris or wherever he went, one of the things was other scientists that would go there would walk away, you know, scratch your hand going, "Boy, my life's over." I guess one of the more famous things, there's a photo of it, when the American Institute of Electrical Engineers was going to give Tesla their most prestigious medal, which was called the Edison Medal.
Yes. Yes.
He rejected it. The gentleman who was the chairman of the committee, it was a three-day soiree, and he was friends with Tesla, D.A. Barron. At the very beginning of the book, there's a statement by Barron, I think, who best quantified what Tesla did. And Barron said, when he introduced Tesla, "Nature and nature's laws lay hid in night. God said, let Tesla be, and all was light." So Tesla's on the dais, white tie and tails, you know, mid-40s, physically striking. Everybody's in the audience, even Lord Kelvin, who was originally a detractor of Tesla's, comes to pay homage to the great Nikola Tesla. And as you know, Tesla had some peculiarities, one of which was he also dealt with OCD. He had issues with cleanliness, yet he spent every day almost of his life with pigeons. He adored pigeons. So this was in Bryant Park, just outside the meeting place. And as Barron is continuing to talk, Tesla leaves, walks outside. Barron looks to introduce him. He knows where Tesla went, walks outside, and Tesla's acting almost like a scarecrow, standing with his arms out. And birds from all over come to alight on his arms and his head and walk around and peck seed that he had given him next to his feet. Can you imagine this? In this man with white tie and tails in his park? So he looked, Barron looks at him, and Tesla waves a finger saying, "Don't come near." Finally, Tesla stripped the pigeons off, walked in, went up on the dais, and this is what he said. He said, "All of you have given me this award far too late. For you seek to adorn my body with medals, should I strut like a peacock. Remember, without me, none of you would have a reason to exist." Now, I know that is as big as it gets in terms of talking the talk, but they all knew it was true because he walked the walk.
Yeah. Yeah,
he walked the walk all of the time.
He
didn't do it. It wasn't egotistical. It was a culmination of decade after decade of being negated by the mainstream scientific community, all the while proving them wrong on a regular basis.
Yes.
You know, and not only was he the magician, the master of anything that was electrical. As you know, he created, in fact, someone just sent me a link a few weeks ago that industry started to use a valve of his, a one-way valve with no moving parts. Also, a bladeless turbine engine. He worked on everything, I mean, all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, the truth is, and there's an image of it in the book, from the United States Patent Trademark Office. I want our readers to see
right
that he holds a patent for wireless communication. You and I couldn't be talking if it weren't for that patent.
Yes.
Think of it.
Exactly.
we couldn't be talking. And I put it in the book because it's probably, when you look at it, one of the simplest patents you could look at. Well, you go, you look at it and go, that's no big deal. And yet, aside from altering the curve, it may have done more to alter the direction of humanity than anything else.
Yep.
And yet, no one even thinks about it. At the very beginning of the book, if I may share this with your readers.
Sure.
Indulge me for a moment. At the very beginning of the book, it was part of an email from an individual who was anonymous, and he was talking about how he lost his electric power for 9 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote a little ditty just after that, a few lines, and this is what I said. Now ponder this. If you never recited a Keats poem, or heard a Beethoven symphony, or stood before a Rembrandt painting, if you never understood the theories of relativity, or read a Tolstoy classic, how would your life be different? Probably not at all, because most people have never had these experiences, and yet they live generally good lives. But try living without alternating current for 9 hours, or even 9 minutes, and your life becomes instantly very difficult and frustrating, if not utterly unbearable. Thank you, Nikola Tesla.
Great.
Just that one invention.
Yeah.
You know, you look at all these office buildings today. Fluorescent lights, that's his invention. He called it coal light.
Right.
Because you can touch the fluorescent light when it's on. You can't touch it incandescent.
Yeah. Yeah. Try changing a bulb that's been burning for a while. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So how this man, and he gave it all, and I guess another way to quantify what drove him, and it's a recurring theme in the book, is he wanted to lift the burdens from the shoulders of mankind. And unlike other scientists, he did it in his own time.
Yes.
We're not waiting a century later to discover alternating current or wireless communication. He made it reality while he lived.
Yes.
And that's something, you know, I've been asked many times when I lectured about Tesla, what about Da Vinci? And my answer would be, what about him? He never was able to pull anything off.
Right.
In fact, one of the most famous sketches of his was a VTOL, vertical takeoff and landing aircraft. Yeah, you know who holds that patent? Nikola Tesla. He holds the patent.
He made it work. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, exactly.
Marco, it's been a fascinating time just hearing you talk about Nikola Tesla, reading your book, Tesla, His Tremendous and Troubled Life from Prometheus Books. Fascinating reading. So much of popular history needs to be rewritten to acknowledge the incredible contributions of Nikola Tesla. And I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about him and about his incredible body of work. Can people go to a website to find out more?
Yeah, go to MarcoPerko.com.
Easy.
MarcoPerko.com.
Marco, thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure.
And I've enjoyed it. And once again, you did read the book, and I deeply appreciate that.
Listen, I loved reading your book. That's what I've been doing this show for 31 years, and that's my favorite part of the show. Many times is preparation by getting to read all these wonderful books. So I thank you for writing a fascinating book.
And thank you for having me.
Our thanks again to Marco Perko for joining us to talk about his book, Tesla, His Tremendous and Troubled Life, from Prometheus Books, an imprint of Globe Pequo, the trade division of the Roman and Littlefield Publishing Group. Once again, you can go to Marco Perko, MarcoPerko.com. We'll see you next time right here on your favorite radio station and your favorite podcast on thebookshelf.podbean.com. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless.